Hey everybody, welcome back. This is Pop Culture Network Radio for November 1st, 2013. I'm glad you're here. No, really. You are awesome. You should love yourself. There you go. That's your daily affirmation for the day. That's as much as I'm going to get into because, frankly, I don't care. No, I won't say that. But anyway, today on today's show, we're going to be talking about Survivor Series, some of my favorite Survivor Series matches from over the years. We're also going to be talking some toy news, some comic book news. We'll talk a little bit about Halloween, the actual holiday. We've covered the movies already. And just some other good stuff going on in the world around us. So, without further ado, let's go ahead and get started with some toy news. First up, I don't know if you guys are aware of this, but they still make Transformers. Yeah, I know. And some of them that are not based off the movies are actually really cool. There are triple changers that have been out for the past year or so, and there's a repaint, kind of reworking a little bit coming out. You're going to get Double Dealer, who is a repaint of Blitz, was it Blitzkrieg? Blitzwing? What was his name? Crap. You know, of course, I start talking about it, and I had it sitting right here, and now, Blitzwing, there you go. Blitzwing. He's mostly a repaint, but I guess there are a couple new pieces on him. But the big one that I saw that I'm excited for here is they're actually going to put out a Rhinox figure. And this is, what, Voyager size? Or Voyager class? Yeah. Rhinox is one of my favorite characters in Beast Wars. And coming out with a figure on him, actually really looking forward to that. I'm definitely going to be picking that one up when it comes out. The only other Beast Wars figures I have, though, are Megatron and Optimus Primal. And they're in a different scale. They're from, figures that came out, like, 2003 or something like that? I don't remember. So, anyway, looking forward to Rhinox. Scatter on the internet if you want to find pictures of who Rhinox is, if you're not that familiar with Beast Wars. But for me, one of the Transformers that I'm actually very much looking forward to. I know a lot of you guys, though, you like Masters of the Universe, so here's one for you guys. Pop Culture Shock Collectibles is putting out a Beastman statue. I guess he's based off his appearance in Diamond Ray of Disappearance, which is technically the first episode of Masters of the Universe. Let's see. There's a standard edition limited to 500 pieces and an exclusive version that includes a wolf bat accessory limited to 200 pieces, which is only available through the Pop Culture Shock Collectibles website. Pre-orders go on sale November 11th. I'm trying to find the price here in this press release. I don't see the price in the press release. It just says you get a 10% off discount from ordering directly through their website. So there you go. I don't see anything else on here, so I was hoping to find a price, but I don't. So anyway, Beastman Collectibles, you know, Scotty Cash hates Beastman. I don't want to say hates Beastman, but he thinks that Beastman is kind of overdone, like Bumblebee. You know, they use him way too much as a sidekick, and I kind of agree. Bumblebee and Optimus Prime, not a team, you know. Bumblebee works for Optimus Prime, but every time you make a line of Transformers, you don't need a Bumblebee. Every time you make a line of Masters of the Universe stuff, you don't have to have a Beastman, you know, but a lot of people think that he's a key character for them, so I guess whatever. Sideshow Collectibles, they're doing a Hellboy premium format figure. Actually, I guess this is a statue. They say it's a figure, but it looks like a... Yeah, it's a non-movable statue. But anyway, this is based off the original Mike Mignola artwork. So it's not based off the movie. You don't see that happen a whole lot with some of the stuff. So kind of cool about that. It's got a removable trench coat. So you can have them in that shirtless look, or you can have them with the trench coat on. And apparently he's got a swappable head. Because they've got a picture here of the head with the full horns and his little crown, the tiny little like demon circling around his head. Looks really good. Once again, no price. Not due until August 2014. But they went ahead and sent out this press release with a whole bunch of pictures. looks really cool. I don't know how much Sideshow Premium format stuff goes for, but I'm sure it's pretty pricey. Not incredibly cheap. Let's see here. In comic news, the big story this week is that DC Comics is leaving New York and it's going to be headquartered in Burbank. A lot of people in the New York area are kind of upset that they're leaving New York because comics, they always see comics as a New York thing. Me not being from New York, I've always kind of hated how people saw comics as a New York thing. Every Marvel comic, it seems like, takes place in New York City and or at least has huge arcs set in New York City. It's like the rest of the country doesn't matter. So well, that's one thing I've always liked about DC is that they have all these different cities. And sure, they're fictional. But at least they take place in other cities that kind of, you know, portray other parts of the United States, not just around NYC. Part of the move, apparently, is moving DC closer to the other entertainment arms of the company, being owned by Warner Brothers and having a greater pull into television, movies, animated features, etc. They're going to move to Burbank as a character studio, makes comics, and then the comics are used for making TV shows, movies, etc. And like I said, I'm happy with it. I'm glad they're moving. Good to see that, as far as I'm concerned. Other DC news is that it looks like Talon is being canceled, and that's probably as much as anyone cares to talk about it. It kind of a funny note. It looks like My Little Pony this week has sold more copies than the new issue of Sandman. Sandman returned to print, but looks like it just wasn't as exciting as the new My Little Pony. So there you go. I don't know what that says about the comic industry. I don't know if it's such a big deal. But it certainly is interesting to see that. One other story to comment on real quick is Beware the Batman. Beware the Batman cartoon show disappeared from Cartoon Network a couple weeks ago. And apparently Cartoon Network kind of stealthily put out this statement that just said, currently, Beware the Batman is no longer on our air. DC Nation will continue on Saturday mornings at 10, 9 Central with new exclusive shorts and a full hour of encore episodes of Teen Titans Go. One of the guys who worked on the show tweeted out something that the show was going on hiatus until January, but when asked for more details, he just basically said the network is not currently not airing new episodes. Stay tuned and thanks for your continued support. Now, the reason why this is upsetting a lot of people is because Cartoon Network put Young Justice and Green Lantern the Animated Series on hiatus, and then after a while they just quietly said, oh yeah, those shows aren't coming back, they're canceled. So, it looks like that show may in fact be done. Didn't even make it through the entire first season. And there's a couple problems with the show. One, a lot of people didn't like the art style. The art style on it was kind of funky. Alfred was this bald, stronger guy who was more of the sidekick, really, than anyone else. They used Katana instead of Robin, trying to switch it up a little bit. And so the style that they went with didn't really click with a lot of people. And I don't think the stories really clicked all that well with a lot of people. I sat down with my kids trying to watch the first episode. And after about 10 minutes, they said it was too creepy. And they just didn't want to watch it anymore. So when you've got a new cartoon on Cartoon Network and your 8-year-old and my daughter's now 7, son's about to be 9. But when, you know, your two kids who are both under 10 years old don't want to watch the cartoon, that's kind of bad. That is bad news for them. And it's kind of interesting how, you know, I had a problem getting my kids to want to watch the cartoon. Instead, they discovered Digimon, of all things, on Netflix. And now they both love Digimon. And so they want to watch Digimon more than they want to watch anything else. So, I don't know what to tell you. I don't think that the show like I said, they didn't cancel it, but it's on hiatus, and they do have this tendency to put something on hiatus and then just kind of say, oh yeah, by the way, it's not coming back. So take that for what you will, and let your conspiracies abound based off of that. I guess we got a little bit of TNA news we can talk about. Basically, TNA, they sent home Eric Bischoff. Eric Bischoff had been kind of the head of creative, I guess you could say, bringing in talent and head of matches and scripts, whatever. And they sent him home at the pay-per-view. He wasn't at the last round of TV tapings. Basically, they just sent him home to sit out the rest of his contract, and then he'll be gone. Hulk Hogan left, and there was a lot of talk about, you know, is he coming back? Is he going to sign with WWE? WWE really didn't want anything to do with him. TNA was apparently going to offer him more money, and that may be part of the reason why Eric Bischoff has been sent home. TNA has lost a lot of money going on the road and doing all their tapings on the road. They thought it was going to make their guys look like bigger stars if they went in front of more people, more arenas. And it really, it may have worked for the fans they already had, but it didn't really draw in any new fans. So it didn't help in that regard of making their stars look bigger so more people are watching the show. They have the same... You know, the ratings have not gone down dramatically. They're basically the same. So they're doing some cost cutting, cutting some guys' contracts, you know, not renewing certain guys. Apparently, they have cut their ties with OVW. They are no longer going to use OVW as developmental because they just can't afford to continue paying. Janice Carter, who is Dixie Carter's mother-in-law, I believe, she sent out an email basically telling everybody in TNA that the rumors are not true, that TNA is not for sale. But apparently people behind the scenes said that as of, you know, Tuesday this week, it was up for sale and they were trying to find someone to buy it. So if it's not up for sale, that means whatever sale they had been working on has fallen through. So no idea where that really leaves the company right now. It looks like, as of right now, it looks like they may be trying to find another spot in Orlando where they can have a permanent filming location. They can't go back to Universal because the soundstage they were using there is already being used by some other show. I don't know exactly what it is, but they apparently liked Orlando, and since being on the road hasn't really helped anything, they're going to go back to Orlando. And apparently a lot of people have gotten notice that TNA would like them to relocate to Orlando because that's where they are going to be. So take that for what you will. I mean, it's a lot of speculation and rumor, but I don't know what else you can do about that. TNA this week, as far as Impact goes, show was okay. It wasn't the worst thing ever. It wasn't the great thing ever. It was basically just a show. Part of the problem was the wrestling on it really wasn't that great. Like, it was all okay. It was, you know, passable, I guess you could say. But nothing really all that spectacular. They do have a pay-per-view that's starting tonight, I think. One of their shows that they taped earlier this year. They did a whole bunch of stuff for pay-per-view ahead of time. It's a tournament of all, well, not all past champions, but a tournament of a bunch of past champions. And amazingly enough, they did the pay-per-view and they didn't have AJ Styles on it at the time. I think because they filmed it during the time that he was you know, supposedly gone from the company, and they didn't bring him in to do this one random pay-per-view. And apparently it just works that it's coming out now, and there's no AJ on it, because AJ has technically left. He made the appearance last week, which made absolutely no sense, but he left the building. He left in the convertible that Dixie Carter was trying to bribe him with. Gave her the one finger salute off camera and drove off in the car. And he's gone. The rumors are right now that he is actually going down to Mexico and doing some shows. Was it AAA, maybe? He was going to do a couple shows down there defending the TNA World title. And they're going to try to do what CM Punk didn't do. I don't know why they had him come back after the pay-per-view. It doesn't make any sense, because they're kind of doing what they should have done last week with not having him be on the show and having him go down and apparently do this stuff. But he's going to go down to Mexico and do some shows down there, apparently wrestling. And Dixie Carter is doing a tournament to crown a new champion. Bully Ray is not in the tournament because she blames him for failing to defeat AJ twice in a row, the original pay-per-view match and the rematch. And she's letting Sting get back into the mix for whatever reason. And they're going to try. Even though they messed it up last week, they're going to go ahead and try and do the storyline the right way and have these other matches and other promotions with the title. And I think part of the idea of doing it in Mexico is they're trying to get a better TV deal down there, and they're hoping to have more viewers down there and maybe push some pay-per-views down there. I'm not sure exactly what is going on, but it looks like they're doing some sort of Latin American expansion as far as business goes. So if that pays off in the long run, then, you know, fine, whatever. As far as the gauntlet match that they had, it was okay. But the main event on Impact was actually really good. It was Bobby Roode and Kurt Angle. It was, you know, rematch from the Bound for Glory pay-per-view. Both of them kind of doing the same match. It was a little slower, not as good as it was at the pay-per-view, but still excellent. And Kurt Angle, the storyline is that he is too old and too beat up. He got hit and tried to go into these convulsions, and the referee stopped it, and they couldn't get him to stand up on his own strength. And so they're playing up that injury angle a lot more than what they had planned originally. The whole point was, you know, that Kurt Angle is older and he can't live up to the standards that he thinks that he needs to, and he's pushing himself. And he's pushing himself too hard that he just can't work at the level he has been. And there's apparently going to be some sort of breakthrough moment where he just pushes and pushes and pushes until he finally kind of busts through to that superhuman strength. And whether or not that actually works for them in the long run, who knows? I have no idea if they can actually pull that off or not. But, I mean, it's an interesting idea. It's not one that you see a whole lot in wrestling nowadays, where, you know, they've done from time to time certain people on a losing streak trying to get that big win, but they're taking this one to a different level with, it's not just a losing streak, it's just he is too old and injured. And that's a storyline not too many people want to get involved with, so kind of interesting. Like I said, overall, the show was okay. It's worth watching, at least for that main event. If you've got it DVR'd or you've got it on demand or something, just kind of fast forward to the end. You'll be all right. No big deal on the rest of it. This morning, I sent out a message and basically just said I was I was recording this radio show today, the podcast, and I wasn't sure what kind of topic I should get into, what type of bigger deal. You know, I'm talking about news and recap TNA, but usually we try to have some sort of feature on the show. And the feedback I got was I should do something on Survivor Series. Survivor Series is coming up for WWE, one of their big four pay-per-views of the year. And, sometimes WWE, when they're on a roll, they set up something in Survivor Series that plays out to Royal Rumble, which sets the road for WrestleMania. But sometimes Survivor Series is just, you know, a great pay-per-view. Sometimes it's isolated from the rest of the storylines and the pay-per-views, has its own stuff going on, does some great stuff. And the Survivor Series match is a very interesting match. Traditionally, it is just it's just one of the unusual matches that they came up with that really kind of works. I say they came up with. I don't know if they actually invented it or not, but anyway, they get the credit for it. So what I wanted to talk about were some of my favorite Survivor Series matches. And I don't mean matches at Survivor Series. I'm going to talk about actual Survivor Series style matches that happened at the Survivor Series pay-per-view. And I'm not going to do these necessarily in countdown order. These are more or less kind of the order I remembered them, or I kind of thought about them, wrote them down, tried to look them up, get some notes on them. And so we're going to go through the list of some of these. I looked up who all was in the matches, the dates, and we got a little bit of information on them. But I do want to hear from you guys. With Survivor Series coming up, I've given up on WWE, like completely. I still catch the news on what's happening in WWE, usually stuff, you know, kind of behind the camera, creative type stuff, not necessarily storyline stuff, just because I still follow TNA, Ring of Honor, and I still get, you know, the dirt sheets, as they're called, and get some of that information. So for the most part, I still kind of pay attention to the business side, although not necessarily watching their product. And part of it's just, I got burned out on WWE and their inability to push guys like Daniel Bryan and CM Punk the way they need to be pushed to get to the top. Like, they tried with Punk, but then it's like after about 4 months, they you know, give up on him. Dolph Ziggler is one of those guys who the fans loved and the fans wanted to see him as champion. The fans kept pushing for him, and WWE would let him get to a certain level and then just kind of pull out the legs from underneath him. Same with Daniel Bryan. The fans love Daniel Bryan. They want Daniel Bryan to be champion, and WWE will, you know, they'll push him enough for a storyline and then just pull out the legs from underneath of him and just, you know, basically say to the fans, hey, idiots, you know. CM Punk, I guess they like him a little bit more because Paul Heyman. Paul Heyman is somebody that WWE, you know, Vince and Triple H kind of have this love-hate with him. They understand that he's a genius when it comes to marketing and certain storylines, but they hate him because he comes up with ideas that they don't, and he pushes people that they wouldn't. And they know that Punk is a Heyman guy, so they kind of respect him a little bit, but they really don't allow him to be the champion he needs to be. He could be 10 times the star of John Cena, but John Cena's their guy. John Cena's the big buff guy. He's the bodybuilder guy. You know, also WWE, when they made Raw 3 hours, I know it was USA Network's push to get a 3-hour Raw, but it just made the show feel like a chore every week instead of something I enjoyed. And when they started doing the storylines, like with Zeb Coulter and the whole racist thing, I was just like, you know what? I'm not enjoying this. I'm just not going to watch it anymore. And I just stopped watching. I was like, I'm not doing this. So I stick with TNA and Ring of Honor, and I enjoy those a whole lot more. I'm not following what's happening in the ring as far as Survivor Series, what the pay-per-view matches are going to be. But I do have fond memories of a lot of these matches over the past... how long have I been watching? I've been watching since like 84, maybe. I've been watching wrestling. So I kind of went through some of my favorite ones. And one of my favorite ones, I know a lot of people are going to hate me for this one. In 2004, they did a match. It was Triple H, Batista, Edge, and Snitsky versus Orton, Benoit, Jericho, and Maven. And I remember being so excited for this for two reasons. One, Maven. Maven was one of those guys that you know, he did great on the reality show. They put him on TV. A lot of people liked him. He looked like a little rock. But the problem was he looked like a little rock. He was not the rock. He looked like a little rock. He didn't have the same charisma, which is, I mean, you could give him a manager and it wouldn't be that big of a deal. But he just wasn't as big and buff as they wanted. I was still, though, very intrigued to see him in this match. And also Snitsky. He faced Snitsky in this match. Snitsky is one of my favorite guys of all time for all the worst reasons. The pimples on his back in high definition, the yellow teeth. He punted supposedly a baby straight out of a baby carriage. I mean, come on, Snitsky was awesome. But they had this big storyline where you had this like team Bischoff, or you had Bischoff going on vacation, and you had these two teams against each other, and it was basically the Orton was head of the kind of Vince McMahon side, whereas Triple H and Batista were part of that other, you know, the click side of wrestlers. And whoever was going to win this match was going to get control of WWE for like a month while Eric Bischoff was going to be on vacation. And besides the fact that Maven punched Snitsky, just right in the face with a stiff right hand and just busted him right open. And so Snitsky grabs a chair and he hits Maven with the hardest chair shot. It was, I laughed uproariously when it happened. And my memories of this, I'm sure, make it like 1,000 times greater than it actually was, but he waffled him with this chair shot. That was one of those like warm, fuzzy moments when you see a reality TV pretty boy just taking a chair to the head from this pimply yellow tooth monster. It was just great stuff. And the other big thing about this match was, if I remember correctly, this is where Batista started to turn on Triple H when he realized that he could outpower Triple H, and the two of them started that feud. And that feud is really what elevated Batista. Like, they pushed Batista as a big guy for a while, but this is really where Batista started to kind of come into his own. And I think Batista, by the end of his run in WWE, he was actually very great, especially character-wise, personality-wise. Like, he found his charisma, he found his groove. He started having some really good matches, had some great... His feud with John Cena right before he left the company was great. They did some really good stunts, you know, throwing him through a spotlight and fighting on top of cars at some of the, you know, pay-per-views, whatever. But Batista, I think this is where he kind of came into his own, and that's one of the reasons why it sticks out in my mind so much, and I enjoyed it so much. Let's see here, what else do we have? The next one on my list, if you remember the ECW WCW invasion, that started out as such a great storyline and they flushed it right down the toilet. But in 2001, they capped the whole thing off with this Survivor Series pay-per-view. It started at WrestleMania, it ended at Survivor Series. This should have been like a four-year arc, but instead it became more of a four-month arc, which kind of sucks. But the match at Survivor Series was really, really good. And one of the great things about it, if you got the DVD for Survivor Series in 2001, they did a music video kind of recap at the end. And I think I probably watched that thing like 10,000 times, just watching that over and over again. This match, as a Survivor Series match, this was like 45 minutes. I mean, this thing was huge. This was long. It kind of really, this was the end of the Attitude Era. This was the end. Obviously, the Monday Night Wars were over. This is where that whole thing kind of wrapped up. And if you were going to say, you know, that the modern era of WWE kind of started in with this pay-per-view. When 2003, 2004, it kind of started to shift away from that more mature theme stuff. By 2007, it was the family friendly company. This was really the end of the that whole attitude stuff. And it basically, you had on one side, you had The Rock, Undertaker, Kane, Jericho, and Big Show. On the other side, you had Stone Cold, Kurt Angle, Rob Van Dam, Booker T, and Shane McMahon. So your stalwarts of the WWE on one side, on the other side, Stone Cold, he had turned with WCW. Kurt Angle, he was part of ECW even when it switched. They built that brand out of it several years later. But Rob Van Dam, obviously ECW guy, Booker T, WCW, and Shane McMahon, the guy who supposedly owned WCW. And it came down to Rock and Austin. So you had these two guys who were the main guys of the Attitude Era, even though they were both on the WWE side, those two facing off against each other. And it turned out that Kurt Angle was a mole. He had gone to the WCW side, and he turned against everybody. He was the rat. He was the mole. He was the guy who was there to bring him down finally at the end. He took the title belt and he hit Austin with it. Rock grabbed Austin, hit the Rock Bottom on it. Huge ending. The Alliance was gone. WCW was gone. ECW, WWE? They hadn't started yet. WWE, ECW, whatever. Sorry about that. I got carried away. But this was a huge match when it ended. And, boy, this was one of those... It was such a great pay-per-view. It was such a great match. You wondered how they were going to be able to follow it up, and they really didn't. At that point is when WWE kind of went on cruise control, and we're just kind of stuck coasting from that point forward. Another big one that comes to mind was actually from the year before. In 2003, you had Chris Jericho, Christian, Randy Orton, and Mark Henry, and Scott Steiner for Eric Bischoff's team against Shawn Michaels, Booker T, Rob Van Dam, and the Dudley Boys for Steve Austin's team. And it was Austin versus Bischoff. And basically, if Austin were to win the match, if his team won the match, then he would basically be able to run Monday Night Raw. If Bischoff's team won, then Austin was out as being a co-GM of Monday Night Raw. And this was a match where it was just brutal. It was brutal and bloody. And it's one of those matches where everybody kind of hit their finisher at one point. Sweet Chin Music, came out. You got Batista bombs. You got the ref knocked out, and Bischoff and Austin both got in and started fighting. And then Austin chases off Bischoff. Batista just grabs Michaels, hits him with the Batista bomb, wakes up the ref, and Austin is standing like at the entryway, shocked. Like he just had this look on his face, like, how did I lose? It was hilarious. It was fun, really bloody. I forget, somebody started bleeding in this, and I forget who it was that just really was just like pouring blood. Maybe that was Shawn Michaels. I don't remember. But that was 2003. So we're looking at 2003 and 2004, two really good matches there. And I think, like I said, that was kind of the end of the great creative period in WWE. But there were some other great Survivor Series matches from way before that I remember, that were really, really good, that really stick out in my mind. One of them, it took me a while to figure out which one this was, but this was 1987. They had a gigantic Survivor Series match. This was, make sure I get all my names here, because there were so many guys involved in this. You had the Hart Foundation, Demolition, the Islanders, the New Dream Team, and the Bolsheviks on one side. Then on the other side, you had Strikeforce, the Young Stallions, the Killer Bees, the British Bulldogs, and the Fabulous Rougeau Brothers. So you had 20 guys. Strike Force at the time were the tag team champs, and you had all these tag teams involved, and they actually went out pretty early. Strike Force was gone, like, within the first half of the match. I mean, maybe within even the first third of the match, they were out. And that always kind of stuck out in my mind, that was crazy, that they were gone so early, because they should have been there, you know, forever. But you had guys like Haku in there, you had Paul Roma, you had Valentine in there, and then the winners at this match, with all of these guys, if you're thinking Strike Force, British Bulldogs, Heart Foundation, Demolition, like, who do you pick out of all those guys that you think is going to be the winner of the match? The winner of the match is Jumpin' Jim Brunzel. Jumpin' Jim Brunzel from the Killer Bees pins Bret Hart to win this match. I mean, this is a blow your mind moment, especially at the time, 87. I was going into, let's see, I just started sixth grade in the fall of 87. So I'm watching this one, and this just blew me away. It's like, oh my gosh, how do these guys come out of nowhere in order to win a match like this? You know what I mean? When you have an underdog, and part of the storyline is, because there's 20 guys in there, you know, you have these guys that can kind of play a strategy. You can play the elimination to your favor, and especially guys like the Killer Bees were kind of older, you know, if you want to say statesmen of the company. They had been there longer. They kind of knew how to work a match a little bit better, and you could play that argument of they'd been there so long, they were smarter, they had that ability to, you know, figure out how to work the match to their favor so that they end up coming out on top. So I love that one a whole lot. The last one I want to mention, and it's kind of funny, I just now realized that these are all kind of in groups of years here, was the other one from 87. Andre the Giant, King Kong Bundy, Rick Rude, One Man Gang, and Butch Reed against Hulk Hogan, Bam Bam Bigelow, Paul Orndorff, Don Morocco, and Ken Patera. And the reason why this one sticks out in my mind is partly because these are the guys that I remember from when I was a kid, like growing up. These were the guys. WWF at the time, their show was syndicated. You had to have a local television station that was willing to run their programming that would sell them the time slot, basically. You had, like, Superstars of Wrestling, Wrestling Challenge, I think, were the two big ones at the time. And where I lived, one of them was, like, Friday night at midnight, and the other one was Sunday morning at, like, 11 a.m. or something like that. So I ended up having to tape them most of the time. But these were the guys that I grew up with, I really enjoyed, and it was right around this time, just shortly after this, that WWE disappeared from my local television. And I think I could get Saturday night's main event, and I could go to the local video store, and I could get the Coliseum Home Video Titan Sports video cassettes and rent those. But this is about the time that I couldn't get the television anymore. So all of these guys in this match, these were the guys that I had been watching on the weekly TV for so long. And this, of course, following up after WrestleMania 3, WrestleMania 3 was so huge that, you know, it became an important deal to watch all these pay-per-views, especially after, you know, WrestleMania 2, WrestleMania 3, something like this was so important to watch. And part of this one was, of course, that you're having Hulk Hogan, Andre the Giant, again, you know, coming against each other. But, I mean, guys like Rick Rude, King Kong Bundy, Bam Bam Bigelow, Don Morocco, even Ken Patera. I know a lot of people hate Ken Patera. He was a Olympic weightlifter, I believe, that became a wrestler that wasn't that great, whatever, but I really enjoyed all of these guys. These were classic guys from my youth. And so this is one of those matches that on a Saturday afternoon, nothing else going on, you know, you just want to put something in and watch some wrestling for a little bit. I can watch this Survivor Series match over and over and over and over again. And it ended with Andre the Giant actually pinning Bam Bam Bigelow for the final fall. And this is what set up for Andre getting a actual rematch for the WWE title. So this was like a big deal in the storyline in the day. Hulk Hogan versus Andre, for you guys who are, you know, maybe you're in high school now or you're in college now, and you're looking at some of these old feuds, and maybe you understand kind of Rock and Austin, but Hulk Hogan, Andre the Giant, I dare say, was bigger than Rock and Austin. I mean, Hulk and Andre was like the biggest thing in the world. This is what put professional wrestling in the mainstream, that made people pay attention, that feud of Hogan and Andre. And it was, I remember at the time, my parents watched shows like Entertainment Tonight and PM Magazine and some of these shows that were like the entertainment, you know, we didn't have cable growing up, so we could only get what you could catch with the antenna. So we got about six stations growing up. And so some of these entertainment shows were the only time that you'd get a lot of this information. This was, you know, pre-internet days, pre-cell phone, you know, all of that kind of stuff. And so I remember watching Entertainment Tonight, and they had a segment on Survivor Series, on this match coming, with this Hulk Hogan, Andre the Giant stepping back in the ring as part of this big match. And, you know, it was one of those things where my mom was like, now, wait a minute, you're watching this stuff, right? Like, the thing I was watching, the thing that she never watched growing up, that I was into as a kid, is now invading, like, her pop culture entertainment at the time. You know, she was in the age range of the, you know, adult demographic that people really shot for at the time. And here's the thing that I watch as a kid kind of invading into that pop culture demographic. So that kind of tells you how it kind of interwove itself into the pop culture back in those days. I mean, Hulk Hogan, they put him on the cover of Sports Illustrated, you know, in I think, was it WrestleMania, before WrestleMania 2, was it, that they put him on there? When you can put a professional wrestler on the cover of Sports Illustrated, I mean, that tells you how big it's getting. But for our household, that for this match, it's, you know, breaking into Entertainment Tonight. I mean, that meant something. Nowadays, when they tie into Entertainment Tonight, you're just like, oh my gosh. Because the host of Entertainment Tonight is going to be on Raw, and they're going to do some sort of little skit, and, you know, it gets, you know, you hate it nowadays. You resent it. But back in those days, it was a big deal. It was a really big deal to see that. So if you go back, watch Survivor Series 87, two great Survivor Series matches in there, both worth checking out. And apparently that was 11/26/87, if I Googled correctly, in Richfield, Ohio, 11/26/87 for that Survivor Series. So, yeah. So, I know a lot of you guys, you know, you watch the wrestling that you watch growing up nowadays, but you may not necessarily ever go back and watch any of those old pay-per-views. I'm just going to say right now, go back, find 87 Survivor Series, and you gotta watch that show. You got to check it out. Especially you guys who are, like, in high school. I was talking to somebody from high school. They're in high school right now. And they were like, oh, yeah, I was born in 97. I was like, oh, my gosh, you were born in 97? Like, I was in college in 97. I was already out of high school. I'm so old. I'm so old. I can't believe it anymore. Anyway, guys, that's going to do it right now. That's going to wrap it up for the show tonight. Again, I want to thank you for the suggestion talking about Survivor Series. If there's a topic you want to see discussed on Pop Culture Network Radio, make sure you send me an email. It's dirt@popculturenetwork.com. You can also find me on Twitter. It's @PCN_dirt. You can also find me on Facebook, facebook.com/VGLosers, or on Google+. I now have a Google+ URL. It's gplus.to/PCandDirt. So if you type in gplus.to/PCandDirt, you'll find my Google Plus. And I got to admit, I go to Google Plus more than anything else. It's so much better, I think, than Facebook for a lot of reasons. And whatever I type in Google Plus will go to my Twitter, go to the LinkedIn, go to the Facebook. So you can at least, you know, find everything. But I pretty much do everything through Google nowadays. Also, you can leave us a voicemail on our 24-hour voicemail line. It's area code 217-953-4025. Again, 217-953-4025. And before we go, last thing I want to put out tonight is that yesterday, of course, was Halloween. My daughter got scared at the very first house we went to. Someone had a mannequin dressed up in a scary costume right inside their doorway, and it freaked her out. She was crying. She was screaming. She didn't want to be out anymore. So we came back home, and I actually, this year, I grabbed a bunch of the leftover comics from the Halloween Comic Fest that we did at Killin' Enterprises. And I actually handed those out along with candy. This year at CVS, they had candy on sale. The full-size candy bars at the checkout were on sale, and we had rewards coupons. And if you used your rewards card, you got some sort of discount. And I forget exactly how it worked out, but we spent $20, and we got $40 worth of full-size candy. So we were handing out full-size candy bars. And I put together bundles of the comics from Halloween Comic Fest, so everybody who came by got full-size candy bars and comic books, and it was great. There are a couple people that were just kind of like, oh yeah, thanks, whatever, but a bunch of the kids, they see comic books, they got real happy, started freaking out. It was a lot of fun. So even though my daughter was scared and we ended up coming home early, we still had a great time handing stuff out. It was a good Halloween overall. It was kind of rainy, cold out, but I mean, that kind of makes the fun of Halloween. I recorded an episode of Comic Book Chronicles. You can find that at popculturenetwork.com. We do that in cooperation with theclicknation.com. And then after we were done with that, I sat down and watched Halloween on Blu-ray, one of my favorite movies of all time. And it only makes sense, of course, to watch it on Halloween. And we talked about how much I loved it a couple weeks ago here on the show. So again, that's going to wrap it up for tonight. Let me know if there's anything else you want to see covered on this show. Thanks for listening, guys, and I'll talk to you after a while.